Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Conspiracy Theories with me, Joanna. I know it's been a while, but today's going to be very interesting. And if you have already heard today's episode or today's topic, I'll still try to make it interesting so you can also join along and deep dive into what this conspiracy theory is. Well, what is this topic I keep talking about and I don't mention? Today, I will be talking about the Georgia Guidestones. So what are they? Well, as it's in the name, they are Guidestones in Georgia, to be more specific, in Elbert County here in the U.S. So the Guidestone part, they are literal pieces of stone, slabs, would you say, that contain guides. It's 10 different guides, and it's kind of like things we should follow as a humanity or things like that. So what's crazy about them is that not only do they not know who put them there, or there's not much information about the anonymous person, the one who placed it there, but just the things they say are like crazy, like kind of conspiracy theory type crazy, as in why I'm talking here to you about it. But they're basically, it's a granite monument, and it's, like I said, 10 guidelines. So it's 5 slabs, and each one is written in 8 modern languages. And then on top, there's like a capstone that's like connecting all the 5 slabs in a way. And that smaller slab on top is written, or has a shorter message written in 4 ancient languages, which is kind of like, why? And to me, it fits something that not everyone can read, you know? That it's not necessarily like a popular, like, let's say it's not in English, obviously, right? So then what would you want? A language on top that not everyone can read? And I'm guessing it's just for symbolism, or for to give it that hint of salt, you know, of the Illuminati, you could say. Like with any conspiracy theory, it's always like, oh, the government or something like that. So I'm guessing this is like its hint of it being like top-notch conspiracy theory type thing, which is funny to me. But it's also scary because the capstones, or the capstone on top, is astronomically aligned. And that's kind of scary because you know it was done with intention, with special symbolism, with intent, with the intent of it being placed here. When you think of the overall picture, it's kind of scary. And when you start to detach it and individually pick it, it's just like, it's funny that someone's like, oh yeah, we're going to end the world. Let me place these slabs here. But anyways, let's go on. Let's continue with this without me annoying you. So, like I said, one slab's in the center, surrounded by four other ones, and then there's a capstone on top. If you want to see what this looks like, I would recommend and advise that you Google it so that you understand what it looks like. Because it looks pretty cool, I'm not going to lie, aside from what it is. So what is written on it? Well, the 10 messages inscribed on the stones go as this. The first one is maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. The third one is unite humanity with the living new language. Next, rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. Protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Balance personal rights with social duties. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. So now that you know what the 10 guidelines are and you know what it is, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about it because it's just so interesting to me. So a few feet like west of where the monument is, there's like a granite ledger, like leveled with the ground, and it says the Georgia Guidestones, which is where the name comes from. And then it says that it was placed there in March 22, 1980. Now, who placed this? Well, I have an answer. There was a guy named R.C. Christian, which is Poseidon. And now this guy, the guy that, like, I guess presented the builders to do it, he presented the builders with a shoebox. And there was like a wooden model of it. And he was like, this is what I want. And then he gave them 10 pages written with detailed specifications of what he wanted the slabs and details on it to be like. And in these details, that's where you find the extreme, or you see the extreme detail and thoughtfulness that went into this project, which is, I think the fact that it's so detailed, that's to like, it's purposefulness, if that's even a word, because it's purposely designed to track like the sun's migration from east to west the whole year. Like the fact that they thought of these things, it amazes me. It really does. The four outer stones are positioned specifically to mark the limits of the 18.6 year lunar declination cycle, which is like, are you kidding me? And then there is like a hole that's like eye level kind of in the center of the stone that makes it like easy to find the North Star, because you just put your eye there and you're like, it literally points to where it is. And then there's a smaller like hole drilled and on the capstone, and it serves as a sundial. So like at noon every day, there's like a reading of where the sunbeam hits the center, and it allows you to pinpoint the exact day of the year. So it's like a calendar, you know? So it's like you can't lose track of time, which is very interesting, because it's like, now it's kind of like with the things that it says on the guide stones, you're kind of like, okay, maybe it's more like an apocalyptic type scenario. Or are they going to take us into this type of world ending event and then follow with the things on the guide stone? Like, is it a hint they're giving us or something like that? Like, there's so many things you can think about it, and it just gets crazy every time you go down this like rabbit hole of thinking. Now, what's something that's funny was that the R.C. Christian, which is the guy that, quote unquote, guy that did this, because they don't know his actual name. Maybe that, like I said, we don't know who this guy is, what his intent was, what the purpose of these labs are, or like what the meaning of it behind is. Like, what was the reasoning that they said, okay, let's go do this? So what he did was he allowed the landowners to have full cattle grazing rights as like being nice to them. So they allowed the owners of the land to keep their cattle and graze on it and like continue their own natural lives, or until a nuclear war wipes out 90% of the world's population, whichever one just came first, which is kind of like funny to me, because it's like, oh yeah, you can keep your cattle there, make it grow on until once you don't want to use it anymore, that's fine. Or if a nuclear war wipes out 90% of the world's population, then we got to bring it back. So to me, I find that interesting. And I'll tell you why. Because there's a lot of conspiracy theories that like the president or the higher up classes and the rich and the, or not rich, I'm saying like the 1%, like billionaire rich, that they have like these places underground where they're going to live if their world ends and things like that. And it would make sense, because you end up with 500 million people, which is what the limit is. If it's not, I'm pretty sure it's lower, and that's just like the max of what says. To me, that's kind of like saying, like hinting at it perhaps, or it could be just saying it like as in like kind of to really extend what they mean by you can use it, or it's like a hint. So it depends to you how you want to take it. I don't know. So yeah, I mean, people are calling the Georgia Guidestones like the United States version, like America's version of Stonehenge, which is in the UK, which, I mean, makes sense. If I saw them and if you compare it to Stonehenge, they look very similar, except these obviously have creepy like writings on it and things like that. And there's not like, I don't know, it's just crazy. Now this part is the part that I want to kind of emphasize on. So there's a tablet that's in front of the monument, and it says, let these be guidestones to an age of reason. Now, it's kind of like, what do you mean? Like, you can't just leave 10 words, or how many words? Like 5? You can't leave 9 words and say, let it be a world of reason. How are we supposed to be reasonable when it talks about wiping out 90% of the population? It's very stressful to think about it. Now, the languages on the... I think it's interesting if I touch on the languages that are on the slabs. So, like I said, there's like an explanatory tablet that explains this. But like the 4 languages are Babylonian, cuneiform, I think that's how you say it, Sanskrit, classical Greek, and Egyptian hieroglyphics. There is a lot. To me, I find this interesting because I know there's like other conspiracy theories or there's other theories of thought where like language, like the Egyptian like pyramids and like how that stands for its own like Illuminati type thing. And it's cool to see in a sense that like there's a certain level of like respect to it, I guess, that people are like, okay, like it's kind of creepy, so I gotta kind of just stay away from it. That's what I mean. I don't know. So it's, I don't know. If you really want to know what they look like, look it up. I'm being serious. It is crazy. So now to the part no one asked me for. I'm going to give you my thoughts on what I think on this. So I'm just going to kind of summarize and go over the 10 guidelines. Because it's crazy and kind of scary. And it scares me. So maintaining humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Now, this is reasonable because it's like if the world ends, the only people that will probably survive are the powerful and the rich. The powerful people that we don't even know about. I think those are the kind of people that scare me the most. The people that we don't even know are powerful. And so if you have this group of people surviving, then it's their job to maintain Earth, right? Or whatever. But in perpetual balance with nature. So I'm guessing this is like, it's talking about sustainability and things like that. I think right now you're able to, or the Earth is able to maintain 9 billion people at max. And after that, I think it's kind of like you start to have more people be hungry and things like that. When world hunger comes into a different problem on its own. Because I think we're able to solve it with the amount of food we throw away and things like that. It's just about distribution and how it works. But anyway, stay on topic. It's scary to think that it gives this number because it's kind of like gives you a hint of what the end of the world will look like, where only 500 million and less people are left alive. And that's scary. Because if that's the cap, that means it's way below under that. So the other one was guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Now, this reminds me of like the genetics problem we had in the old times where this was used for racism and for all these other things. It's kind of like what Hitler did. It's like, okay, so it's eugenics. The thing with eugenics is, if you don't know this, it's scary in the sense that it's how we got to Hitler killing so many Jews and people that did not fit this standard that he believed in. And so to think of a world where this is the second thing placed on there is kind of like, damn, you know, because obviously like things like racism and things like that are never going to go away. But so it's scary to think that they're thinking of a reproduction system where fitness and diversity are improved. But at the same time, what does that mean? You know, what does fitness and diversity mean to everyone? What does it mean to the specific group of people that will end up under the 500 million? I don't know. I think it's a good question to ask. As in, what do they mean by this? What do you mean by, is it our definition of diversity currently where everyone's represented, or is it a different type of diversity? Are they changing the meaning of it, or what will it be? Then the other one is unite humanity with a living new language. So this reminds me straight up of the New World Order. Because the New World Order is like a new language, all living under one country or like one ruling group of people. And that's straight up what it reminds me of. I mean, in a way it makes sense. Like, how do you make everyone align in values and things like that? Well, it's like have everyone understand each other with one language, but at the same time, New World Order. And that's a scary thing on its own. The other one is rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. This one I don't get. Because what kind of faith is it talking about? You know, if we're talking about the Illuminati, I can tell you 100% that it is not godly followed. So what kind of faith are we placing? What thing or human being or being are we placing our faith into? And with tradition, I mean, I'm guessing some crazy messed up stuff, as usual. And then protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Now, like I said, this is kind of, to me, the protecting people thing. It's like the thing that's happening in like China right now, where they monitor what everybody does. And you kind of enter like this 1984 type. Is it 1984? Hold on. I need to make sure that I'm getting this right. Yes. That it's like this 1984 world where everyone is not allowed to think, speak, or do certain things. Because in a way it's, oh, we're protecting you from thinking too much. Or, oh, we're protecting you because otherwise we would have wars if you don't think. If you start to think, I mean. So to me, in a way, it's like pushing everybody into one thinking system where you're being protected in fair laws and just courts that are not that I'm guessing will not necessarily be actually just or truthful, because if it's because it comes down to who's controlling the law and who is saying this is fairness and this is not, because fairness at the end of the day is objective. So it's, to me, that's kind of crazy to think about that this would be a rule. And the next one, let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. So this is, again, just a crazier, scarier part of a court. Like, kind of like think of a court system and then it's just all nations. It's kind of scary. And then again, not really, because by this point, I'm sure we probably would have seen worse. So I wouldn't be scared of that. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. This one, I strongly, I'm very passionate about. I support the rule number 7. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Why give petty laws and laws that don't necessarily give you anything, like a parking ticket or like jaywalking, for example, things like that. It's like common sense laws that you kind of understand you should have common sense to not do and things like that. This one I agree with. And useless officials, same thing. Who needs like 50 people working in one job when one person could just do it all? That I do agree with. Number 8, balance personal rights with social duties. This one I also agree. I think we have a level of personal rights that we're supposed to do. But I think at the same time, by living in a society that is productive or modern, I guess you could say. Like, if you don't live in the farm by yourself or in a jungle and you're the only person, I think you have social duties that you should be able to do. Whether that is like cleaning up trash or something like that for your city. Something like that's like just an example. But I think there is a difference and a balance between your own rights and then your social duties that you should do. Now, what kind of social duties will they be talking about? I don't know. But I think in a normal world right now, this makes sense. But if we're thinking about it in like a scary evil way, then it's like, what kind of duties do they have for us? Or at least for the 500 million people? I'm talking as if I would make it. We both know I probably wouldn't. Number 9, prize truth. Beauty, love, seeking harmony with infinite. I mean, it makes sense. Seek truth, love, beauty or whatever, love, and then find harmony with infinite. But I think this leaves a room for no religion, which is interesting to think, as in, what happens with that? Does that mean that you rather focus on living in harmony with, like, the world instead of, like, being in harmony with each other, like, or with other things like that? That's a very, like, there's a lot of things you can question for every single one of these guidelines. 10, be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. Now, I think this one is interesting because it's kind of what we're going through right now. I think regardless of whether you believe in global warming or not, that's on you to believe. I personally believe it because I've seen it happen in my own town. I've seen the summers be hotter. I've seen winters barely even come. And I believe in it. But I also think it has to do with your years and your age. And I think if you are 50 or older, I doubt you care much about this because by that point, you've already experienced all that. I haven't experienced winters as I should have. And And by the being not a cancer on Earth, I'm guessing it's to what we're doing now, where we are polluting the ocean, as in we're doing things like that. And whether you believe, like I said, whether you believe in global warming or not, it's on you. But I think it's undoubtedly honest of all of us to say that there's a problem with the amount of plastic and things like that that we're dealing with, when it's like, even if global warming is not real, it's things that should bother us, because then it's like, where do we trash all these things? What do we do? Does it will eventually stop us from being healthy and things like that? Even if you're talking about, even if we're not talking about global warming, it's like, does having too much plastic fumes hurt us? In general, how does that look in 50 years? Not necessarily, oh, will it heat up the earth or will it melt down things? But does it become unhealthy for us at a point? Is it already unhealthy and things like that? And I think that's what it means by not being a cancer on the earth, where it's like, don't be what's killing the place you live. But I think for number 10, if it's talking about global warming and nature and taking care of it in the future, I'm guessing if it was a nuke and we all got nuked, there wouldn't be much to take care of at that point. But yeah, I don't know how I feel about all of these and things like that. Now that you've heard me ramble and come back and tell you again about my own opinion that you didn't ask for, I hope you enjoyed today's episode and this month's probably only episode because I never post. But if you do want to be tuned in for when I do post, I'll make sure I have something interesting to share. I share when I find something interesting. I don't take this as a real podcast. I kind of just do it for fun, because why not? But yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. I know it's been a while. And if you've been tuning in to the last episodes, thank you for staying here and being patient this whole year of this. I'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you for listening. This was Conspiracy Theories with Joanna.